Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host with you, most of the Five. We've been raising our children out here in these plains in Colorado for 20 years, and we are trying to bring back a little sanity, a little truth to the postmodern world. The basis for truth is the Word of God, and you jettison any basis for truth, any solid basis for truth in your society. Inevitably, even your science will be corrupted, and that will be the theme of today's program. In just a moment, Dr. Carl Werner is coming on to talk about fraudulent fossils. And there's a fair amount of that out there. But crummy science. Bill Jack is in studio with me right now.
Hey.
And there's a lot of crummy science out there. Here's some Wall Street Journal. Came out just this morning. Okay? My dad sent it to me. My dad just laughs at this stuff. He just gets the biggest kick. He has been laughing at this stuff since the 1960s. Just laughing. Laughing and laughing. It just gets a big kick out of it. Because back in the 1960s, you may remember that there was a link established by quote-unquote scientists between saturated fat and heart disease.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
Saturated fat, heart disease. My father laughed himself silly over that in the 1960s.
Well,
and then he laughed even harder in the 70s.
Laughter is good medicine.
Oh, yeah, it is. That's why my dad is like 79 years old and he's still splitting all his own wood.
But that's not a science issue. That's a Bible thing.
My dad actually enjoys saturated fat, too. Yeah. Whenever he wants, he gets saturated fat. And big old donut. I give my dad a big old donut. He's fine with it. He's good with it. But he probably weighs about 130 pounds. He's 5'7", you know. So he's fit. He splits all his own wood. But he's been laughing over this silly, silly connection. Most of the science we get, most of the popular science we get these days is pseudoscience. It's not real science.
That's right.
It's pseudoscience. Based on studies where it's impossible to block all of the possible interfering factors. Why? Because we live in an open world where it's very, very hard to put people into a laboratory and examine them over 10, 15, 20, 25, 50 years of their lives. So there's so much confounding going on in experiments relating to things like origins, things like human psychological, human diet issues, and that this is what's happening here with a link between saturated fat and heart disease.
You know, it reminds me of the George Carlin, who was a comedian, routine where he said, you know, studies have shown that that saliva taken in small amounts will eventually kill you. Everything
will kill you.
You know
Doesn't
why?
Matter what it is.
Because we live in a fallen world.
That's right.
And
That's right.
We try to mitigate things. We try to say, you know, this is not good for you. This is good for you. And if we just went back to God's word, then we would have a basis.
It would help.
Yes.
It would help. I think it's a lot of it's arrogance, though. People don't study in fear and humility.
No.
They're not fearing God. They're not humble before men. And because of the lack of fear and lack of humility, there's all kinds of academic arrogance. They get carried away with their scientific studies. They think way too highly of them. And in the end, they wind up chasing the wrong issues and barking up the wrong trees. And apparently this study on saturated fats goes back to the 1950s. A man named Ansel Benjamin Keyes, a scientist at the University of Minnesota, he did this big study, 13,000 men. Critics have pointed out that Dr. Keyes violated several basic scientific norms in his study. For one, he didn't choose countries randomly, instead selected only those likely to prove his beliefs. Yugoslavia, Finland, Italy. Excluded were France, land of the famously healthy omelet eater, as well as other countries where people consumed a lot of fat, such as Switzerland, Sweden, and West Germany. Other studies have ensued. A half dozen large important trials pitted a diet high in vegetable oil, usually corn or soybean, but not olive oil, against one with more animal fats. But these trials, mainly from the 1970s, also had serious methodological problems. Some didn't control for smoking, for instance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The results were unreliable at best, but there was no turning back. This is the key statement here. Too much institutional energy and research money had already been spent trying to prove Dr. Keyes' hypothesis. A bias in its favor had grown so strong that the idea just started to seem like common sense. Okay, now how many different quote-unquote scientific issues, conclusions have been drawn on global warming,
yes,
in the blank, where people have been, thanks to this scientist media politics cartel of power-hungry, arrogant freaks coming together with their quote-unquote studies and speaking with as much dogmatism as Augustine speaking on the Trinity, you know, the doctrine of the Trinity, or the revelation of God creating the world in 6 days. Okay, on that level, they come out of their laboratories with their highly questionable data. They were not able to block all of the possible confounding factors in the experiment. They don't admit that. They would never, ever admit that. And then they sell it to a billion people.
Right.
And they sell it, and they sell it, and they sell it.
And they sell it.
To the point where, according to the Wall Street Journal article, a bias in its favor has grown so strong that the idea just started to seem like common sense. Too much institutional energy and research money had already been spent trying to prove Dr. Key's hypothesis. They're committed. The Emperor's New Clothes propaganda machine, committed. Committed, baby. Now, the Bible actually has a few things to say about diet. Don't eat too much. Don't be a glutton. Too much of gluten-free, fat-free, caffeine-free, anything will kill you. Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
I saw a plate of cookies the other day, and it said G-L-U-T-E-N, and I free. And I thought, I can eat as many of these as I want because it's glutton-free. It's glutton-free. I can eat all of them I want.
All except for the fact that the Bible doesn't like gluttony. So, I wonder if maybe I'll just go back to what the Bible said.
It's glutton-free.
Eat that with more dogmatism. Wouldn't it be neat to see Southern Baptist churches in Mississippi preaching against gluttony? Wouldn't that be like, wow!
Hey.
Wow, they're actually calling people to repentance on a sin.
Let's not touch my barbecue. Touch thou not the anointed barbecue meat. Okay?
It's okay. I'm okay with barbecue meat. I'm just saying you've got to limit yourself.
What you're pointing out is that science is the new religion, and scientists, or the scientific method, is God.
Yeah.
These are many gods, and it's their pride. You know, it used to be that science was not done by majority opinion, but anymore it is.
Yeah. By the time you're counting PhDs, I got 647 PhDs that say gravity doesn't exist.
Right.
And 432 says gravity does exist.
Right.
I guess it doesn't exist. They're counting PhDs. By the time you're counting PhDs, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But that's your epistemological authority, man.
From saturated fat to global, to climate change, we rely on the latest majority opinion.
Yeah.
And that's the pseudoscience of evolution.
We're going to get to evolution in just a moment, but first, let's hit this global warming thing. Do you know we've been on a 17-year hiatus? The world is cooling down, has been for 17 years, at the same time that carbon dioxide levels have been rising. Okay, so if they're saying the rise in carbon dioxide, human-caused carbon dioxide, contributes to global warming, but for the last 17 years, carbon dioxide continues to rise, but world temperatures decline. Okay, I'm not a scientist here, but it sounds to me like we're losing something of the causality here.
You know, and the chief guru for global or for climate change, is Al Gore.
Al Gore.
Yeah. Yep. Al Gore.
He's the guy.
What's interesting is that Al Gore predicted back in 2007 that the Arctic summer ice could disappear by 2013.
That's last year. Yep. That was last year.
Yeah. He said, here's
a
quote.
By 2013, the Arctic ice would disappear.
Yeah. He said, scientists reported with unprecedented alarm that the North Polar ice cap is, in their words, quote, falling off the cliff. One study estimated that it could be completely gone during the summer in less than 22 years. This was 2007. Okay. Another new study to be presented by U.S. Navy researchers later this week warns that it could happen in as little as 7 years. 7 years from now, he said. Well, what's interesting is that satellite photos of the Arctic taken by NASA in August of 2012 and 2013 show a 60% increase in the polar ice sheet.
So Al Gore is wrong.
Yes.
Like way wrong.
Yes.
But here's the question for me. Al Gore is a very powerful man. He's had a huge influence on governments around the world. I mean, we're talking trillions of dollars of money have been spent on regulating industry around the world because of Al Gore and what he has said with his pseudoscientific evidence.
You know,
Bill, what kind of penance does a man have to go through?
Right.
You know, how does he repay all of the people he has deceived?
He doubles down.
He's going to have to double.
He doubles down on his predictions, because that's why we used to call it global warming. Uh-huh. We don't. We call it climate change.
Okay.
Because he's now going to win either way. I do a whole talk, and I'm going to be doing this at, I believe, at the Czech conference.
Yeah.
Pretty soon, on artificial authority.
Mm-hmm.
Artificial authority. Here is a man who's been rightly elected, duly elected to the second most powerful position in the world, arguably. He was vice president.
Yeah.
And he was elected to that position. But now that he's left that position, he's transferred his authority to an area where he doesn't have authority. Mm-hmm. That's why Jesus said, "Beware the leaven of the Pharisees." Okay? It's hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the Pharisees rightly sit in the seat of Moses,
mm-hmm.
so do what they say, but not what they do. The Pharisees had artificial authority.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the culture, and even in the Christian community, we assign authority to those who do not have authority.
Mm-hmm.
They may have authority in one arena, but they transfer it to an area where they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the classic example is of artificial authority is, if you've ever heard a commercial and there's a voiceover, okay, you go, I recognize the voice, but you can't pin it to a face, to the celebrity. The effectiveness of that particular ad is extremely high. But once you tag the voice with a face, the effectiveness of the ad plummets dramatically.
Wow.
For example, this goes way back. Gene Hackman, who was an actor, okay, French Connection, he did Lowe's Let's Build Something Together. When I heard the ad, I thought, wow, I recognize the voice and it has some authority. But then when I figured out it was Gene Hackman, I'm going,
what does he have to do with building stuff?
He's never come over and helped me with my honey-do list at my house. The guy's 87 years old. Why would I want to build something with him? You see my point?
Yeah.
And what we've done in the culture, and even in the Christian community, is that we have assigned authority in an area where people don't have it to people who do have authority in another arena.
Yeah.
And that's where you get the pseudoscience of evolution, the pseudoscience of climate change, the pseudoscience of diet,
mm-hmm.
is that people who have authority in one arena transfer it and they speak in areas where they do not have authority, but we give them artificial authority.
Or even if they are scientists and they have degrees, they still speak with this arrogance. They have this dogmatism about their conclusions that really don't match the evidence, that doesn't really follow from what they've collected in terms of the data.
Here's an exercise that people ought to do, especially college students. Go to the biologist and ask, what is the best evidence for evolution, to your biology prof. He'll say, go down to my friend, the physicist. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You'll go down there and you'll knock on his office door and you'll say, give me the best piece of evidence supporting evolution. He'll say, you know, you need to go over and talk to the geologist. And then the geologist will say, you need to go talk to the chemist prof.
Yeah.
And the chemistry prof will send you back to the biologist.
It happens all the time.
Because they have areas of expertise, but when you ask the big questions,
they don't have it.
It's pseudoscience.
They don't have it. Right.
It's pseudoscience.
Right. It turns out there's nothing behind the screen.
It's the meta narrative.
A little old man.
That's right. Pay no attention to the man behind
the
curtain.
Right. And in a moment, we're going to ask Dr. Carl Werner about the evidence for evolution.
Yeah.
So that's next on the Generations Broadcast. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Hey,
be back in just a moment. Hey dads, is it time to get away with your sons to build those relationships? Remember, fruitful relationships is what it takes to have a fruitful life. How you disciple your son has everything to do with the relationship you have with your son. So don't miss a once-in-a-lifetime experience at our father-son retreat at the Crooked Creek Ranch in the Colorado Rockies this August. This year, we will be featuring speakers like Scott Brown, Dan Einerson, Mike Chappa, Steve Vaughn, and yours truly from the Generations Radio program. You'll enjoy outdoor activities, training sessions, including wilderness first aid, mountain survival, blood tracking, as well as sports activities, swimming, high ropes course, rock climbing walls, kayaking, and hiking in the beautiful Colorado Rockies. And we're cutting the price for the 2014 Father-Son Retreat. It all happens August 28th to the 31st at the most fabulous retreat center in the Colorado Rockies. Register today for our Father-Son Retreat at check.org, that's C-H-E-C.org, that's check.org under Check Events on the web, or call toll-free 877-842-2432. That's 877-842-2432. And welcome back to the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson. And today, friends, we're going to talk about what it would take for a rational person to believe in historical macroevolution. If you were a rational person, what would you have to have in terms of, quote-unquote, scientific evidence? We've talked a little bit about how science presents itself sometimes as very, very dogmatic about its evidence. But now even the connection between saturated fats and heart disease is beginning to dissipate per the Wall Street Journal article that came out just yesterday. So, again, what would a rational person need to know in order to believe in historical macroevolution? I think you need at least 100 million graduated transitional fossilized forms between an amoeba and arthropod, another 100 million graduated transitional fossilized forms between arthropods and fish, another 100 million graduated transitional fossilized forms between fish and amphibians, another 100 million graduated transitional fossilized forms between amphibians and reptiles, and then another 100 million between the weasel-like creatures and dogs, another 100 million between marsupials and cats, another 100 million between theropods and birds, another 100 million between marsupial tree shrews and primates, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the observation of a single instance of biogenesis, the appearance of life from non-life in a laboratory would be helpful, and the replication of that abiogenesis again and again and again in a laboratory would be helpful to identify the natural cause by which abiogenesis occurs. You know, I don't think people have thought through this very, very carefully. What kind of evidence would we need in order to substantiate and to come to the point where you're going to go to all the universities and all of the museums paid for by tax dollars around the entire United States and sell to people this idea that inanimate object turned into a human being over 4 billion years by a mechanism of pure chance? Not sure what the mechanism is outside of chance. Maybe punctuated equilibrium. Not really sure. Don't really have much evidence here. Never been repeated in a laboratory. It seems to me that a rational person, not somebody who's been taken through the mill of the university and been through the emperor's new clothes propaganda machine. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about rational people who need evidence, need to see something in order to believe, in order to maintain a position concerning macroevolution with as much dogmatism as we see around us. That's the question today. So I'm going to pose this question to Dr. Carl Werner, who's got some wonderful materials, by the way. He's got a series of DVDs called TheGrandExperiment.com. You can see it at TheGrandExperiment.com. It's a series of DVDs that's been on six or seven networks around the world. And he is analyzing, just carefully, rationally, as a rational person should, he analyzes evolutionary evidence. And you can check out his work at TheGrandExperiment.com. Dr. Carl Werner now joins me on the Generations Broadcast. Carl, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, well, thank you. It's great to be with your audience, and I loved your intro. You have so many correct points, and it would take a set of data to make someone rationally believe in evolution. Yeah. But the problem is those data points are missing that you just mentioned. Everything you just mentioned is not there. Yeah. So there is a problem at the start here.
Yeah. And am I wrong for asking for evidence? Am I wrong to say, you know, before I believe what you're trying to tell me, would you please show me some evidence? Especially because these men purport to be scientists, don't they? They're about evidence, I thought. I thought that's what scientists do. They look for evidence.
Well, this is a strange area of science where the conclusions are drawn before the evidence is found. Even Darwin did that. He said, I believe in evolution. I believe that one animal changed another. Hey, but I don't have the fossils for it. But, hey, they'll come out someday. And now we're, you know, 150 years later, we've collected a billion fossils in the museums, 1 billion, and still the groups are just showing up without ancestors. Yeah. Darwin would be appalled if he saw the fossil record. In fact, I think Darwin would abandon the theory of evolution if he saw what the actual fossil record came out to be, yeah. which is sudden appearance of groups. Yeah. You know?
How many bona fide transitional fossils are there out of the billion fossils? It seems to me we see these fossils. Yeah, I recognize that one. I recognize that one. I recognize that. Seems like we recognize most fossils, right?
Yeah. Well, and see, this is where you get into splitting hairs. You could line up 10 different corals or 10 different starfish, and an evolution scientist projecting onto those animals would say, oh, see, that's evidence, one starfish changing in another. But no, 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 that's not what Darwin was talking about. Darwin was saying a bacteria change into a starfish, a bacteria change into a coral, a bacteria change into a sponge. But all of these groups, all 7 major animal phyla groups, show up suddenly without transition between a bacteria and the animal group. And that's very problematic. So what they do then is they start within a group and say, let's line them up and see there's evolution. And it just is not true.
Then they fabricate evidence. Truly, they fabricate evidence. Is that your take? I've been looking at your website a little bit, and I have not seen your work at this point. But can we say that there's fabrication going on?
Kevin, I would have never said that because I'm a physician. I'm a scientist. Graduate summa cum laude. I respect scientists. Mm. And I'm not one of these, you know, theorists, you know, that said, you know, that somebody, the government created 9/11. You know, I just don't believe in conspiracies, purposeful fraud. But I've been at this now for, I don't know, 20 years interviewing these guys. And now I have to say yes. I would not have started out at that point. I said, no way. There's no way that these fossils are fabricated. But after I finished this whale evolution segment, I'm like, oh, my goodness. I can't believe what they have done. They are fabricating fossils. In fact, if you go to the largest museums in the world right now, that's the Carnegie, the American Museum of Natural History in New York, the London Natural History Museum's website, there's fabricated fossil after fabricated fossil where they've attached, in this case, whale body parts to walking animals and said, oh, look, we have walking whales. These are on display currently, and I have interviewed the scientists who put the whale body parts onto the four-legged animals.
And what are they saying? Do they admit to it?
They admitted to it.
Huh. Incredible.
The thing is that when I went in to do these interviews, and you can see these interviews on my website, they're tremendous interviews, thegrandexperiment.com, under the whale evolution page there. When I went in to do these interviews to see their walking whale, which would be a four-legged land animal that had whale body parts, whenever I went in to see the original fossils, I look at the table like, where is the head where you said there is a blowhole? Where is this tail where you said it had a fluke, whale's fluke? Where are the hand parts? And see, what they did is wherever fossils were missing, they said, oh, this is a good fossil. Whenever we have a fossil with parts missing, we can substitute in our mind what would have been there, and we can create any missing link we want. It is fabulous how this process occurred, that when they found the most incomplete fossil, that's the best evidence for evolution, because then they can start substituting, they can project, they can conjecture. And what these animals turned out to be when they found more parts of them is they didn't have blowholes, they didn't have tail flukes, they didn't have fins. The scientists who found them admit this. And yet if you go to these the biggest museums in the world, Tokyo and Melbourne and Pisa, Italy, these fossils are on display currently, and it's mind-boggling that these scientists haven't recalled.
Are the rest of the scientific community up in arms, these guys, for their fabrications? Are they pulling out these fossils? Are they taking them out and saying, wait, we're sorry? Are they issuing any apologies at all?
Well, to be honest with you, this story, the paint hasn't dried on this story yet. Mm-hmm. This just came out. In the last 2 weeks, for some of these. I interviewed the first fellow 10 years ago, but if this is coming out now just as 2 weeks. But I'll just venture to say that it'll take 2 to 3, 4 years for them to take down these fossils. and then we'll have to go into another new scenario, and it'll be very quiet. It won't be any fanfare. There won't be any criticism. Mm-hmm. It'll just be, like, quietly taken down. As each creationist goes into these museums and said, you know, this is a fake fossil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
unbelievable.
What's happening psychologically here? Let's try to analyze as best as we can psychologically. Are these men so committed to the evolutionary theory or hypothesis that they're over anxious to get whatever data they can? Are they trying to fool themselves? Are they trying to fool others? Psychologically, what's happening to these men?
No. They're not trying to fool anybody. But here's what it goes. And here's the danger of bad science. Dr. Phil Gingrich decides he doesn't want to work in an office. What does he do? He decides to become a geologist, study rocks. Then after studying geology, he says, you know what? I want to find the animals the transitional fossils between a land animal and a whale. I'm purposely going to set out to find this. Now, see, that's dangerous because now you're set up for a fall because everything you see, you interpret in that light. Oh, here's one. Maybe this is a transitional. See, that's not how it should work. Uh-huh. If you think that they're out there, people should just be finding them and bring them to you.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to go out, dig up an animal, and every time you find one, you say, oh, this is a whale intermediate. And that's what they did. They projected onto these animals, and you and I could have done the same thing. It's just bad science to project and predict what you're going to find. And then when you don't find the complete fossil, then start substituting fossils and adding body parts. They did this in human evolution, too,
right,
where they would
right.
find a modern human, and they'd say, oh, it was a ape man, because I believe it was an ape man, so I'm going to cut the pelvis and make it an ape man, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you think people are losing confidence in science? That we started out the program this way, so much is presented as fact. Saturated fats produce heart disease, and its saturated fats have been bad for 50 years. And now Wall Street Journal's come out and say, that's not so bad. Turns out we don't really have quite the data to really prove it. After 50 years of selling this thing to you, global warming's on a 17-year hiatus, carbon levels still rising, but global warming's been taking a vacation for 17 years. At some point, do people say, whoa, modern science has been teaching these things as absolute fact for 50 years, for 100 years. And then routinely we're getting reports saying, oh, we didn't really mean that. We really didn't mean that. At some point, does the populace go, I'm not sure I follow these guys anymore. I'm not trusting science.
You know what? There is good science and bad science, but about 60-70% of these reports that come out are just BS. When you actually look at what they did and look at the numbers and analyze the statistics, you know, it's just BS. It's like somebody wants to prove that fatty food causes, you know, heart disease or whatever, and they set out at it incorrectly, you know. And the true science is you're always trying to disprove yourself. It's called the null hypothesis. So Dr. Gingrich should have said to himself, I think whales evolved from land animals, but everything I find, I'm going to try to prove that wrong. But that's not what he did. He did the opposite. He didn't apply the negative null hypothesis. He said, everything I find, I think, is a whale. I don't believe science. Except for the good science. I love good science.
Mm-hmm.
Good CAT scans. I love good antibiotics. I love good. But I don't trust drug companies.
Yeah.
No. I don't trust their studies. They're all biased. There's a reason for them making those studies. They want to get rich, you know.
Yeah.
And these guys have an axe to grind. They've already come to the conclusion before they've even studied the data. And so then they start shoving the data into their patterns and say, oh, wow. It fits. Look, it's perfect. Gosh, every rational person would now believe evolution based on this walking whale story, which, by the way, turned out to be a bunch of, you know, bull, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was an engineer for a long period of time, and I actually enjoyed being able to create a closed environment, block as many factors as possible, and then
Absolutely.
Drop a rock 99 times and conclude with 98% probability that gravity exists to a, you know, R1, R2, G thing. You know, I was very happy to do science, but I established my case on probabilities. I always worked off of probabilities, alpha risks,
That's
beta
right.
risks. I was always working off of probabilities, and then I came out of the laboratory and said I did the best I could to block as many factors as possible, And I think there is a causality relationship here based upon the repetition of working this thing, you know, with a sample size of 90 or 100 or 1,000. And that was good engineering science. I like that science. But it's also humble science because it's humble science because
that science excites me.
Yeah. Yeah. It establishes it with probabilities, always, always revealing to people that there is a possibility that the causality relationship that was established in the laboratory wasn't quite right, that we didn't block enough factors in the process.
Exactly. And everyone should start over on evolution. All the scientists who believe it say, okay, start over. And let's do this from the beginning. Okay, how does DNA form naturally? It doesn't. How does proteins form naturally? It doesn't. How cell walls form naturally? They don't. How would life start? I have no idea. It should be end of discussion. Don't present this back to me until you get those answered. You know, and then, okay, then how does a fossil record work? You know, show me this bacteria changing these groups. Well, they don't. Well, just go away and don't even write about this until you can come up with the data.
Yeah.
But no, they've already concluded, Kevin. They've already made their conclusions. They're just trying to twist the facts into evolution because they believe it. Honestly, they believe it. But they haven't looked at the big picture. They haven't asked the hard questions. And they're not willing to stop once the answer is no. See, you would have stopped in your engineering experiment once it gave out a probability, well, this is just random chance. Yeah, yeah. You say, well, this is a bad experiment.
It'd be too expensive
to
pursue
it. No.
Mm-hmm.
If I hit a wall here, it doesn't matter. I'm going to keep believing it. No, you should stop at the first wall.
Mm-hmm.
They go through wall after wall after wall. This couldn't happen. This couldn't happen. This didn't happen. There's no evidence for this. And it doesn't matter. We're going forward. You know, it's crazy.
Mm. Well, I'd like to thank you, Dr. Carl Werner, for this illuminating interview, one of the best we've done on evolution, backing up, looking at the big picture, and talking methodology. Very important stuff today. And encourage people to thegrandexperiment.com. It's a series of DVDs that Dr. Werner has been working with. Thank you again for joining us on Generations. We appreciate you, Carl.
Thank you, Kevin. Bye-bye now.
I hope this program's been helpful to you, friends, as we bring a biblical apologetic to the area of science, questioning the fool and his folly. Lest he be wise in his own conceits. And that's the real thrust of what we do. That's the apologetic we bring. It's a presuppositional apologetic, but it does challenge the fool in his folly. It gets into his worldview and tries to hold him to self-consistency, to his own worldview. And that's what we do on this radio program, hopefully encouraging and strengthening our young people for the worldview wars that go on out there. If you would like to support our radio program every month or every May, I pulled together 100 sponsors to keep this program on the air for another year. We've been on the air for 10 years, and we have been growing at some point exponentially, but every single year we grow on this program, extending the outreach to hundreds of countries, extending the outreach to tens of thousands of people around the United States. And if you have been encouraged by the program, would like us to stay on the air. Now, we're not a real expensive program. It doesn't take a lot of money. We don't buy up lots of AM and FM stations. Rather, we do most of our work on the Internet, and that makes it a lean and mean machine. If you would like to support this, we need 100 sponsors. That's it. Just 100 sponsors to keep us on the air. And to be a sponsor, go to our website and click on Donate. Go to KevinSwanson.com or GenerationsRadio.com and click on Donate today and be one of the 100 brave sponsors who gets behind this worldview program. This is Kevin Swanson encouraging you to join us again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.